everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Down to the Wire. Week one is officially in the books, Mason. A lot happened. There were even some games that didn't think were going to be good games, but ended up being pretty good games. The Big 12 had a rough time this past weekend, Mason, along with some other teams that we will get into later. But week one's in the book, Mason. How are we feeling?
Cam. Before you turn this whole podcast into a Debbie Downer podcast, let me just say something real quick. Buff Nation, we made it, baby. We are here. It finally happened. Pack up the Louis because the bandwagon bus is gone. We don't want anybody else on the bandwagon. We're done with it. Prime, I believed. It was me. Run the tapes because I hyped you up the whole time. And everybody was dogging it, but we made it, Buff Nation. Shedeur Sanders went crazy. Travis Hunter, I don't even have anything to say about that performance because that was insane. I've never seen anything like that. Dude played basically the entire game on both sides, and dude, that was insane. But Buff Nation, baby, we made it. We're here.
If y'all haven't noticed, Mason is now a Colorado Buffs fan and is no longer an Alabama fan. The transition is complete. He is about to place his order for a Sanders jersey as well as a Travis Hunter jersey. He'll be swapping them out probably between quarters during games.
I'm trying to find out if I can buy season tickets after week one. Haven't had any success yet, but we're working on it.
crazy, man. What a freaking game.
How is that even possible, dude? Like Travis Hunter playing as much as he did and being as impactful as he was, like, it was insane to watch. He had the huge interception down there on the goal line, which honestly it almost saved the game for him. And then even the big play, I think they were down by four and somewhere in the fourth quarter, and he had the huge catch on 3rd and 16 to help them continue the drive and then go score a touchdown. I mean, that was incredible, dude.
Yeah, I mean, all the skilled players for Colorado showed why they were so good. So, I mean, if you were to listen to the podcast last week, which hopefully you did, Mason and I kind of disagreed on this game. I thought TCU was going to blow Colorado out. And I am happily wrong on this one because I really do want to see Colorado and Deion succeed. And the reason I thought that was going to be a blowout for TCU was because of the lines of scrimmage. Like, I thought TCU would be able to run the ball, and I thought they'd be able to get tons of pressure on Shedeur, and they just wouldn't really be able to get the ball to their playmakers. Because, I mean, if you look on the outside, you look at the DBs, you look at wide receiver and running back for Colorado, like, they're as good at the skill position area as anybody else in the country. The issue for them is going to be the lines of scrimmage. That's how it's going to be all year. And so I just thought, you know what, TCU, they lost a lot of players, but, you know, their identity is still there. Their defense wasn't great, but I think their pass rush and their front seven will be able to control the game and won't be able to give a ton of time. And I was completely wrong. I mean, Colorado was able basically to do whatever they wanted on offense. Yeah. I mean, it was just a scoring fest, and they were able to score last and get the stop when they needed it. And their skill players and their star players stepped up. And that's what, and when you have as many great players and star guys, I mean, you can win any game whenever the line of scrimmage for the other team isn't being controlled. And that's what happened, man. It was crazy.
Yeah. And like you were saying, their skill positions are really deep. The thing is though, like you were saying, up the middle is a little shaky on their defense. For some reason, TCU decided to throw it 42 times. And I just don't think you're going to get that same game plan out of Nebraska this week. That was one thing that really surprised me. Like, I thought TCU was going to come out and just try and run it down their throat the whole time. And you kind of saw a bit of that in the second half when TCU started to actually gain some momentum. They were giving the ball to Trey Sanders a lot. But for some reason, they just decided to make it a scoring fest with Colorado. And I think that is going to be something that is a challenge for a lot of teams, especially when they're coming up. Like, I don't think they're going to beat Oregon and USC. I'm not going to get ahead of myself with that.
Well, but Mason, this is your Colorado Buffaloes here. Like, what are we talking about?
But yeah, like, those games are going to be really fun though. And Colorado is going to be in a position to win those games just because they're going to be able to score as many points as they really want to, if we're being honest, especially against USC. That game's going to be crazy. But I'm really interested to see how they come out next week against Nebraska, because Colorado was basically doubted for a while after Deion was hired. And to come out and put up a performance like that and kind of bring yourself back on the big stage, I think it's going to be interesting to see how Deion can handle coming off a performance like that with this team. Because when something like this happens, you kind of have to control your expectations with it. So seeing how he handles that is going to be pretty cool. Also, like, the other thing that really surprised me is how disciplined they actually were in the game. Like, going into it, like, TCU just came out of, just came off of being the runner up in the national championship. So you expect them to come out and be the more disciplined and better coached team. But coming out of the game, man, like, it just felt like Colorado was pressing all the right buttons. They had an incredible game plan. Deion had them coached up very well and ready to go, and they executed, man. So, like, that's the one thing that surprised me the most out of everything, is how well they were actually coached.
Yeah, they for sure were. And there, after this game, like, obviously the hype train really took off because it's Deion, it's Colorado, yeah, and all this stuff. And so because of that, you get these kind of two sections of the college football fan base, of one of hype train all the way. They're going to be awesome. You know, they're going to compete for the Pac-12. You know, they're great. And then there's the other side of it of, dude, it's just TCU. TCU wasn't that good. Like, they haven't arrived. You know, they're just going to come right back down to earth. I'll believe it if they do it again. Like there's those two things. Where I'm at with it is, like, I'm in the middle, so I guess I'm, like, in this, like, kind of third-tier fan, where I'm like, hey, like, this team, and really it's just a completely new team than it was last year because of all the transfers.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But this team won one game, and this program won one game last year. Their win total is 3.5. Like, obviously, you win this game, and we're recalibrating the expectations for this team now. And so now, doesn't matter what they do, like, I feel like it's probably going to be a letdown for people against Nebraska, especially if they lose. Because if they lose, like, you know, after, you know, the trash that Deion kind of spewed out, which I loved, of like, hey, we keep receipts and all this stuff, they lose to Nebraska, like, social media is going to be, like, all over them. You know, and it's going to be like kind of that ugly. It's like, hey, dude, like, this is a program that nobody even thought was going to beat TCU. Their win total is at 3.5. Like, this is a horrible program that really didn't even have the money to pay for it, pay Deion, but he came anyways. And they just beat the 17th ranked team in the country last week.
As a 20-point dog, too. It's not like it was even close. 20-point dog.
No, like, nobody had real any, like, everybody's like expectations, almost anybody's. I mean, you have the few out there that are like, no, like, I picked Colorado to at least cover or win. Like, you had those out there. But the majority of people are like, oh, you know what, it's just Deion. He's just, you know, getting a ton of attention, but they're not going to be any good. And them showing this shows, like, they'll, like, you know, we were talking about surpriser teams in each conference kind of in the preseason, you know. Neither one of us picked Colorado, but now, like, recalibrating expectations, they're going to be the team that you're not going to want to play.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, USC, because
honestly, they can outscore anybody.
USC, you better get your defense right, because I wouldn't want to get in a scoring fest with Colorado. And who would have ever thought you'd say that? Nobody, man. Nobody would ever say that. And then you add on to the fact, when it comes to defense, passing defense, Travis Hunter takes away half of the field. He's a legitimate lockdown corner and a legitimate wide receiver one. Like, when would we ever see? Like, you don't even see that on Madden. Like, it's impossible even to do that on Madden or the old NCAA football games.
You rarely have guys who will even come in and play, like, a couple plays on the opposite end. Like, this dude played the entire game as a wide receiver and then turned around and played the entire game as a corner. Like, that, dude, that's insanity. Like, I can't even wrap my head around that. Like, I said, I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, for sure. And so I'm very interested to see the follow-up performance against Nebraska, because Nebraska is a completely different team than what TCU is. They get to play at home, so that's good. I'm sure with all the hype, that place is going to be rocking with people that have never gone to a football game before, so that'll be interesting. But, yeah, I mean, you're going to be playing a team in Nebraska with a new coach in Matt Rhule, and they're going to be defense and run the ball, which is completely opposite of what TCU did. So we'll get to see how Colorado really stacks up with a completely opposite style of play. It'll be real interesting to see. I don't know what to think. I mean, we're going to be picking this game, I guess, a point spread here towards the end of the show. But even sitting here right now, I don't even know where I'm going with this yet, because we're still in the spot of, hey, these are also like Nebraska is still a brand new team. You know, they had a heartbreaker against Minnesota. I mean, the offense wasn't pretty, but Minnesota is a good team. Like, we just like we're still trying to figure out who these two programs are, because they're in massive different spots coming off of week one.
So let's run through this real quick. Their schedule: they've got Nebraska this week, but obviously I'm going to pick Colorado. Like you said, you're kind of you don't know yet.
I don't know yet, Mason. I don't know how I feel yet.
So then after that, you have Colorado State, which you're probably winning that game. So you have a legit chance to start 3-0. Going to Oregon the week after that. So then you have Oregon and USC. Those are two tough games for them. It'll be interesting to see. Then after that, you have a decent stretch of winnable games. You go to Arizona State, Stanford goes to Colorado, and then you play UCLA. I think they can get Arizona State, they can get Stanford. So if you're sitting there saying, let's just say they lose to Nebraska, they beat Colorado State, you're already a 4-win team at that point. You're two away from a bowl game. Then you have Oregon State. That'll be a tough game too. Then you have Arizona, Washington State, and then you finish off with Utah.
There's a realistic chance that this team goes 7-5.
I mean, yeah. Like, I think they can, they'll at least make a bowl game this year. And for
I think they for sure, like, if anybody placed a bet on the Colorado over, like, just be giddy whenever you can cash in that ticket, because it's coming. And I know we're like a month out from this, Mason, and anything can happen when it comes to injuries or whatever, but that game against USC,
it's gonna be crazy. Crazy.
Like, if I were to pick it right now, I'd pick Colorado to cover and win.
The over, I wonder what the over under on that game is going to be. It's going to have to be flirting with 70.
Yeah. Oh, easy. Easy. I mean, that obviously shows where what I think of USC too, because, you know, I kind of talked about it last time, but I mean, if they beat USC and beat some of these other and win some of these other toss up games, I mean, that's 8-4. Who would have thought that Deion Sanders, we would be sitting here having a realistic conversation of, oh yeah, Deion Sanders in Colorado, they won one game last year. They could go 7-5 or 8-4 this year.
Yeah. Man, this is great.
I mean, when I texted you after that game, I was like, dude, I love this sport. I love this sport so much. It just makes everything better. Everything. So that's Colorado that we need to get out of the way. Let's kind of move backwards and let's go to Thursday night. To Florida, Utah. And let's talk. I mean, Utah won with their second and third string quarterback against Florida. And Florida didn't look good.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't even so much that the player, like, this was a complete failure. The fact that they had so many penalties that, like, extended drives for the other team or destroyed themselves on like fourth down attempts to where they had to punt it, or oh hey, we punted it but we have two players wearing the same number on the field so now Utah gets the ball back, or whatever. It, like, there were so many of those instances that's like, okay, what the heck were you doing all fall as a coaching staff?
That's all on Billy too, my guy. But
now, he was your guy, Mason.
The weirdest thing coming out of the game for me is that Utah felt more like the SEC team than Florida did. Like, Florida got bullied basically that entire game by Utah's second and third string quarterback. Like, I coming out of the game, I felt like it said more about Utah. Like, I think Utah's kind of in this place where they're not the sexy pick to win the Pac-12 ever. like everybody wants it to be Oregon and USC and Washington, but every year Utah comes out and they're like, no, guys, it's us. And like, I kind of felt that from my end, like I wasn't in love with Utah this year, but then they just come out and they do their same thing. They ground and pound, they beat you. And it's just, it on my end, I kind of feel like I need to stop doubting Utah at this point, but I just can't, it doesn't go through the skull very well.
Listen, like Utah at Utah is one of the hardest places to play in the country. The thing that I think both of us were kind of nervous about on this game was because they were playing their second and third string quarterbacks. They didn't have Cam Rising. And so like they were obviously in like, hey, let's try and do as little as possible to win this game. And they like the score seemed way closer than it was. Like that was not a close football game.
No, not
in any sense. And the only reason the score showed as close as it was is because you're playing with your second and third string quarterback. Like you have Cam Rising out there. They probably win by three touchdowns, yeah. Four touchdowns. I mean, easy. I mean, it on it. Like that is like super, like good, big props to Utah for them continuing what they are doing. There have been a solid program for the past 4 or 5 years, the most solid program in the Pac-12. And they're going to be a force to be reckoned with again. But if you're a Florida fan, man, like you, here's what I'll say about Florida fans. They do not put up with losing in any
sense. Ever. No.
They are the quickest fan base that I've ever seen. And I'm an LSU fan. They are the quickest fan base to turn on a coach and get a coach fired. Like we're talking about the program that had Dan Mullen, who had just went to an SEC championship with the potential of winning it, came close to beating Bama. And then the next year he has a stinker and they aren't very good. And then he's fired. He's gone. And I mean, maybe there was some stuff happening up behind the scenes. Maybe Dan Mullen was like, I just don't want to coach him. Like, I don't know what the real story was on that, but the middle of that next season, like it was, oh, Dan's about to get legit fired.
Yeah.
And he just had a great season. That was that was the year after the shoe toss. It was the year after. But like, no, like you just had a guy go to the SEC championship game and had one of the best teams in the country that year. And then now a year later, because he lost all of his players, we're going to fire him. Like that's Florida. They're not going to take this crap from Billy Napier, man.
Like, I think the only thing that's helping him out right now is his buyout is in like the 30s. So $30 million to buy him out. I know you can cash out or you can fork out that money pretty easily at Florida. But that is pretty steep. And also they're towards the top right now of the recruiting rankings. So I think if he finishes off a good recruiting cycle and actually brings in some of those guys, he'll be able to save his job. But if they keep slipping at the rate they are right now this season, that seat's going to get real hot.
I mean, he's going to be – and, like, recruits aren't like fans, and they don't really look at how the performance is on the field with their commitments and everything. But if this team keeps looking the way it's looking and going as bad as I think it's going to get, like not making a bowl game bad – like that negative recruiting, because these kids are still getting recruited, doesn't matter if you're committed or not, that is going to ramp up like crazy. If you show the incompetence you have as a coaching staff, not being able to clean up these kind of penalties and these mistakes that you had against Utah, it's not looking good for you. And he could be on as hot of a seat, if not hotter, than Neil Brown is at West Virginia right now. Next year. And I thought it whenever they hired, like you had heard things about Billy Napier of him being a great coach, him being the next one, but dude just didn't Lafayette, man. Like this is this is a completely different beast, and he didn't really realize it at first at Florida until he had not a great recruiting class, and then he got it, and now you're just hoping it's not too late. Because, I mean, yeah, you could have a great recruiting class come in just because you had, I mean, go ask A&M how that went for them.
Yeah.
they had a great recruiting class, got hyped up, and they still couldn't win. Now maybe they're better this year and will be really good the next year, hoping that they keep all their guys together. But like, just because you have a great recruiting class coming in, like, those guys aren't going to be ready to contribute day one. Like, you got to show real improvement. And if they aren't going to show any, like, dude, this team, let me go ahead and just pull up their schedule real quick, because it, like, we both thought they were going to lose this past week. I thought they'd show more, a little bit more fight, and it would be a little bit more competitive longer than it was.
Yeah. So I picked them to cover, right? Yeah. Because, like you were saying, I was a little hesitant because of their playing against two backup quarterbacks, and you can't even come out and fight. Dude, that's like the bare minimum of what they should have done, is come out and been equally as physical, if not more physical, than Utah. But they couldn't even do that.
Couldn't do that. And so here's their schedule. They'll get a win this week against McNeese, and then they host Tennessee, and they're going to get run out their own building against Tennessee. They are. Like, it's not a question. They are getting run out their own building against Tennessee. Then they play Charlotte. So after the month of September, they're going to be 2-2. And then they go on the road to Kentucky. Loss. 2-3. They play Vanderbilt. Last year they lost. They could win this year. I mean, it is Vanderbilt. So let's give them a win. So they're at 3-3. The rest of the way, they could lose out. They could lose out the rest of the way. Because after Vanderbilt, you place at South Carolina. You play Georgia. Arkansas. At LSU. At Missouri. And then Florida State. That's a three-win season if you lose out that stretch. Mm. Pick a game, just to get them to four wins, pick a game that you might feel a little bit more comfortable with them winning at one of those.
Pick maybe one. Missouri? Like, maybe Missouri?
But it's but at Missouri, man. Yeah. It's not even at home. Yeah. The only game on that schedule in that stretch that I would be a little more comfortable maybe picking Florida, and that's at this point, maybe later in the year I feel different, but it's Arkansas. I mean, if you heard my preview on Arkansas, I'm not high on them. But
that's the thing. If you can't even be equally as physical as Utah, you're not going to be anywhere near what Arkansas is going to do. That's one thing that Arkansas can hang their hat on, is that they're very physical and they're going to run it down your throat. So, like, if you can't even kind of hold yourself up against Utah, it's probably not happening against Arkansas.
And so, like, I'll ask again, like, you go – four wins at Florida.
Billy.
Like I'm legitimately asking with this fan base. And if you're a Florida fan and you're listening to this right now, like, hit me up on social media. Like, how do you bring him back? I get it's year two. How do you bring him back after this is year two. You're supposed to have at least some sort of improvement. You look horrible, and if you go four wins this year, how can you have any confidence in this guy? I don't care what the recruiting rankings say, okay? This is about winning games on the field. This isn't about winning who signs the best players on paper. It's not. I mean, the best teams do sign the best players, right? Like, that's obvious. Like, the best teams have the best players. But, like, they're at least performing. And like, when Bama was getting to be Bama under Nick, you didn't have this. When Kirby was at Georgia building up before Kirby was Kirby, you didn't have this. I mean, this is Ed Ogeron after the Natty type level crap, man. It is sound the alarm bell. You better turn around and get to a bowl game. If you want to be back, if I'm a Florida fan, like, that's where I'm at, because he's lost me, man.
And Coach O took his buyout and went to the beach. So
he went to, with the Orange Beach, man. Billy, you might be joining them soon.
But look, before we move on from this, we really need to give the Pac-12 a shout out. They were what, 12-0. I mean, that's incredible, man. Dude. That's a good performance out of them, and of course, they're going to be dead next year. So, of course, because the big wigs can't get their crap together. They just want more money. They got to go find another conference. The year after, the Pac-12 is probably the strongest they've ever been. So, of course, we're going to blow it up. But shout out to the Pac-12, man. 13-0, that's pretty cool.
And pour one out for the Big 12 after Baylor loses to Texas State. TCU gets beat by Colorado, and Wyoming beats Texas Tech. If you're Texas Tech, why are you going to Wyoming for a football game?
Yeah, that was rough.
I mean, that's like Ole Miss this week going to Tulane for a football game. Like, what are you doing? You're a Power 5 team. Why are you going on the road to play a Group of 5 team? Like, what are we doing here? Doesn't make any sense.
Oregon State going to San Jose State.
Going to what are we doing? Got what you deserved. Okay. Are there any, before we get to LSU, Florida State, Mason, are there any other games? Let's talk Clemson, Duke real quick. I thought that was wonderful.
Yeah.
It made me feel a little bit better about myself. Clemson is garbage. They're
bad. So I was hyping up Clemson in the offseason. They kind of bit me in the butt for sure. I think the problem with Clemson right now is Dabo has yet to release the reins on the offense. Like, it was very obvious that they're still running his offense that he's had in place for like 10 years now. So if Clemson's going to have any type of success, he needs to pass it over to Garrett Riley and let him do his thing. I don't know if he's going to do that. I don't even know if Dabo can actually develop a quarterback anymore, because it looked like DJ was a problem last year, and then you come into this year and Klubnik's still doing the same things that DJ was doing last year.
And DJ looked great at Oregon State.
And he looked great. So I don't know, man. Like, I'm not off of Clemson right now. I still think they're going to have a decent year. I think they'll be able to bounce back, but I don't know if they're beating Florida State, dude. But, man, that was a bummer.
I mean, whenever we were talking preseason, we were talking about Heisman odds. We saw Cade Klubnik kind of
he was high. Top.
He was awful.
Yeah.
He was awful. I mean, you didn't watch the full game. But, I mean, even the first half, constantly throwing high, not really hitting receivers in stride. But, like, the other thing is, like, he has no receivers. Mm-hmm. Like, as I was watching the game, especially in the second half, I was just sitting there thinking, I was like, man, like, how is it possible that a program like Clemson that was built up has been a national power for the past 10 or so years, 10 plus years, how do they not have any other threats at the skill position level besides their running back?
It's because Dabo's not adapting, dude. He said all that stuff about the transfer portal when it first opened up and how he's not taking any transfers. Like, he's stuck in his ways for some reason. I don't understand it. Like, you've seen all these other teams who are adapting, like, I mean, I'll say Alabama because, you know, I love Alabama. But Nick Saban, everybody said that was going to be the death of him when the transfer portal started. But he adapted and he started bringing players in and blah, 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 blah. The problem with it for Alabama is they're not losing their starters. They're losing their backups. And so that was kind of something that bit them in the butt last year. And that's something that's happening at Clemson too. Like, sure, you're keeping your starters, but your guys that are – that you just brought in a recruiting class are probably upset because they're not playing. So they're going to go find playing time somewhere. Like, for some reason, Dabo just thinks that he can build it how he's always built it. And you just can't do that right now in college football. Like, you have to be able to use the resources that you have around you. And he's just not doing it, man. Like you said, like, their receivers are terrible. They don't really have any speed on their team. And I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, I totally get the transfer portal thing like that. Like, I agree with you. He has shot himself in the foot and shot himself in the mouth by not being willing to take transfers. And I get, like, Keon Coleman, Florida State.
Oh,
first round draft pick. Easy. Dude. I mean, he's that great. You're going to tell me that you're not going to try and be interested to try and get him to Clemson? Like, you don't have anybody. Your leading receiver was Antonio Williams. 7 catches for 56 yards. Next guy, Bo Collins, 5 catches for 50 yards.
They could have gone out and gotten A.D. Mitchell. You're telling me you can't convince A.D. Mitchell to come to Clemson and be your number one instead of go to Texas and be the number two? I mean, Dabo, like I said, he just shot himself in the foot, man. And
I mean, that's like, I totally get that on the transfer portal side. When it comes to the recruiting side, though, you cannot tell me. that you can't recruit legit star players in the wideout position. Your best player on offense is Will Shipley, and he's a running back. And like your two best players, Will Shipley and Phil Maffa. You can run the ball. I mean, they ran the ball pretty good, but obviously they can't get the job done in the offense you run. The offense you run, you have to pass the ball. And you don't have T. Higgins.
DeAndre Hopkins ain't walking through that door.
DeAndre Hopkins isn't coming back. I mean, go down the list of those Clemson wide receivers he had for a run. It hasn't been the same since 2019. And like you just can't tell me that, like, it's, to me, it's just impossible how, like, I get the transfer portal, I get it, but at the same, in like the same conversation though, like, what is he doing? Like, is their talent evaluation for these skilled players just like horrible? Like, what's going on when you're trying to recruit or when you're trying to develop these players? Or am I just like, obviously I'm not a big recruiting guy. Like, I don't keep up with it, but like, are they just not recruiting or coming up second place to these like big elite skill position players? Because they haven't had one. And this is why in the preseason, I picked Florida State over Clemson in the ACC, is because Clemson doesn't have any game breakers on the outside. That was the only reason I picked Florida State at the time, because Florida State has two great receivers. Clemson doesn't have any that I know of. And it still doesn't look like you have any, because there was no separation on those players against Duke. You're playing Duke. How do you look as fast or slower than Duke?
Than Duke, man. Come on. Dabo, what are you doing, bro? Like, they've had star after star after star at the wideout position. And now it's just nothing, man. I just don't know. I don't have the answer for you, Dabo. You're going to have to figure that one out yourself.
So let's look at some of the history of Clemson football. Let's see. So, you know, DeAndre Hopkins. Let's see.
Mike Williams. DeAndre Hopkins.
Mike Williams. Yeah.
And Justin Ross was a stud while he was there. I know he got hurt, but when he was playing for him, like, he killed Alabama in the national championship game that one year. Hunter Renfrow, he was awesome.
T. Higgins,
dude, like, they've had star after star, and now you're just working with nothing. And of course, they're probably going to keep blaming the quarterback, but you can't blame the quarterback all the time if he has nothing to throw to. If his best option is just to turn around and hand it off to the running back every play, you're not winning games like that right now in college football.
Go run the triple option.
Yeah, go call up Navy.
Like, it's just baffling, man. Like, I just don't get it. Like, that's what I was thinking, like, other than being amused how they fumbled two times inside the 10-yard line. But I legitimately said, like, how do they not have any guys?
Yeah.
And, I mean, they play in the ACC, so, like, they're probably going to win double-digit games or go, like, 9-3 or something. But, dude, that, like, then going to have to start having the conversations, like, okay, when does Dabo get on the hot seat? You never think that would ever be a conversation, and here we are. They just got blown out by Duke first game of the season, and their offense put up 7 points on Duke.
I mean, like, I think the whole thing that I looked over is the weird stuff that was happening after Brian Harsin got fired from Auburn, and Dabo was like floating his name out there to Auburn. Like, I just, man, something weird's going on there. I don't know what's happening with Dabo. It feels like he's falling off. I know Feinbaum said that the Dabo dynasty is done, is never coming back. Look, I agree with him, man. Especially with Florida State looking the way they are right now. I don't know how Clemson kind of comes back from this, but it's going to take a lot, and I don't know if Dabo's going to be willing to do it.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to – I mean, he's going to have to do a complete 180 on the transfer portal stuff if he's going to stay where he's at with Clemson.
Yeah,
if he's
gonna walk it back, Dabo. I'll accept your apology for the transfer portal.
All right. Any other games that you want to talk about before we get into the other game?
I guess I should probably talk about Alabama for a minute.
You might.
All right. Look, so it was Middle Tennessee State. There's not a ton that you can really kind of take away from it. I will say there were two things that I was really looking looking at going into the game, and it was, what does our physicality look like? Last year, I don't want to say we got pushed around, but there were a lot of games where I just felt like we weren't as physical as we could have been or should have been. And coming out of the game, man, it looked like everybody was kind of getting back on track of the physicality that Alabama normally plays with. I know it was Middle Tennessee State, but there were a couple plays, Isaiah Bond running over that corner in the first quarter. Like, it was just a bunch of little things like that that made me feel good about where we were physically. Second thing is the mental mistakes. The past like two or three seasons, we've just been plagued with penalty after penalty after penalty. And it felt like a lot of that was kind of cleaned up. So we'll see where it goes from there. That those are two things that I was really coming out of the game feeling good about. So Jalen Milroe ended up getting the start. Last year, in the middle of the season, I said we were going to lose two games with him as our starter. He came out and he looked a lot better than he did at any point last year. And I know, Middle Tennessee State. But the way he was standing in the pocket, making decent throws, and he had three really great deep balls that I was impressed by. So I was very happy with his progression as a quarterback. He looks a lot better. If he continues to develop in the way that he is in the passing game, I think he's going to end up being really good for us. So those were a couple things that I was excited to see. That's it.
Powerhouse of Middle Tennessee.
Yeah.
I mean, Courtney and I watched the game. I mean, like, there's just,
there's not much.
Like, yeah. LSU plays Grambling this week. Like, yeah. No one gives a crap. Like, I mean, I'll watch some of it, but nobody wants to watch that. You're not going to be able to take anything away from it. Like, I mean, it's a game, I guess. The real test is this week, and we'll get into that whenever we get to the picks area. But is that all you want to talk about?
Yep, that's it. So let me set you up real quick. So you were very excited coming into the season. That you were not shying away from that. What was your level of excitement compared to previous seasons? Because, you know, I felt like LSU was going to be a very good team this year. I thought they definitely had a chance to win a national championship. Thought they were going to come out and perform well. So what were your expectations coming in compared to previous seasons, like maybe 2019 or whatever?
I hadn't been this hyped up for a season since 2019.
That's what I thought.
Because, I mean, last year I didn't know what to think because it was Brian Kelly's first year and had tons of transfers. The year before that, I was like, we're going to be back as Ed Ogeron. I mean, I had hope, but we obviously weren't going to be good. The year before that, I was like, I don't know what to expect because COVID and all this weird stuff. I thought we would be like good, but like 2019, like I was like, oh dude, we're going to be like really competing for it. Like obviously nobody knew that Joe was going to be what he was. Like I didn't even expect that, but I knew that we were at least going to be good. And then they blew expectations out of the water, obviously. So like I hadn't had this. And even before 2019, it had been a while. I mean, like, obviously you're a fan and, like, you always think that your team's going to be the best and going to be really good. But 2019 and this year were very similar. Like, hey, we have a legit chance to win a natty and compete for a natty. And then the first half happens. I'm like, okay, I'm feeling good. And then we'll get into that, to the second half of the rest of it here in a minute. But, yeah, I mean, like, I mean, you heard it. I mean, I picked us to go to the playoff. That was my expectation this year.
You were high on Jane Daniels Heisman stuff too. You were feeling good.
I was feeling great about it.
So I saw something, or I heard something earlier today. I want to confirm it with you because I did not do my research on it. So LSU has lost their last four season openers. Is that correct?
Yep.
Man. Not to throw gasoline on the fire, but that's tough.
I'm going to get into it. But before I get into it, Mason, and I know I keep leaving everybody waiting on what they really want to hear. Everybody that I've been talking to has been waiting on me going off about this game since Sunday night happened. But before I go all the way off, and it's about to go off, but Mason, why don't you go ahead and give me your thoughts on the game, and then we'll just get all the way into it.
So I picked Florida State to win the game. But the reason I picked Florida State was because I felt like losing Mason Smith was going to be a big blow. The one thing I did not expect out of this game was for Florida State to basically just bully LSU. Like, they started off really well, or I wouldn't say really well. They had a decent start in the first half, and then coming out in the second half, man, they just looked like a completely different team. And Florida State, honestly, like, just pushed LSU around. And I was not expecting that at all. I'm not super high on Jaden Daniels. Last year, it felt like it was such a chess and checkers games with him. Like, he would have games like he did against Alabama where he just, like, performed out of nowhere and blew everybody out the water, and then he would come back against Texas A&M and basically take a big dump on the field. I don't know what LSU's ceiling is with Jaden Daniels as the quarterback. And it was just a bunch of weird stuff. It felt like they weren't being coached very well in the second half. Like, I don't know. I couldn't even tell you what the game plan was. Like, it just felt like they got punched in the mouth and they got knocked out immediately. The weird thing to me is what the heck happened to Harold Perkins? Like, I think he got his name called maybe twice. And I think the first time you even heard his name on the broadcast was Herb Street just saying, "Hey, they're running away from Harold Perkins." Like, he just said his name. So there was a bunch of questionable stuff that happened. I was expecting more out of LSU. I wasn't expecting them to just come out like that, just be extremely flat in the second half. It almost felt like LSU expected to be handed everything this year and not, like, necessarily have to earn it. And you heard Brian Kelly after the game come out and say, We're not who I thought we were. And it was a tough one to watch in the second half. But yeah, that's what I got for you.
Oh, Mason. You know, everybody keeps asking me, "Oh, what do you think about it?" And I was just like, part of it is like, I don't really know what to think yet leading up to today. I was still trying to, like, wrap my head around what the crap I just saw. And like you said, it's been four straight years of this program losing their opening game. We haven't won our opening game since 2019, since we won the national championship.
Yeah.
How is that possible? Like, we just got, like, this program has gotten embarrassed in the two ways possible to get embarrassed by Florida State the past 2 years. Last year, it was, we just made all the mistakes and handed them the win. And this year, it was, we just got destroyed. It was like we were Middle Tennessee in that second half, dude. Like, that's how it felt. We couldn't stop a single thing and couldn't do a single thing right in that second half.
I mean, it was, what, 30-something unanswered points?
31 straight.
Gosh, dude.
The second half was 31-7 because we got a bullcrap touchdown at the end to Brian Thomas.
Yeah.
The only thing that stopped Florida State in that second half was they ran out of time. Like, the thing that is so frustrating, especially the past 4 years, like, obviously we had a coaching change. Brian Kelly is his second year, so he wasn't the head coach for all four. But, like, we're supposed to get hyped up for the season as fans, and then game one, you lose for four straight years? Like, and you're immediately in a hole. All your hopes and aspirations start off the year, hey, we could compete for a national championship. Now you're like, especially after this game, people are having the questions of, can this team even win the national, like, even, were we even right about this team? Like, what are they going to do in conference play? Like, are they going to get destroyed by Bama? Like, what's going to happen because of the performance you had? And like you, like, it was a tale, like, this team looked completely different from first half to second half. The first half, the defense played great, got four stops. The offense looked great, but you couldn't capitalize and get points when you needed it. personally, I would have taken the field goal and the points. In the grand scheme of things, it wouldn't have mattered. Maybe it did a little bit, but like, you're 4th and 1 from the goal line. Run the ball. Or why aren't you able to run the ball? Or, hey, we run it 2 times. Why are you 2 next plays not, hey, let's try and get like the pick play wide receiver thing on the trips to the right. Why aren't we doing that? Why aren't we running jet sweeps with Aaron Anderson or with Malik that we ran in the bowl game? Why aren't we trying to just do an outside rollout with Jaden? Why are we running the same stuff that we did last year? Because they obviously looked at it and say, hey, this is what they do when they get in the red zone. They try and do the zone read with Mason Taylor going to the flat. That's what they did. That's what we did for both 4th downs that we failed miserably at. Because there was no creativity. Where's the creativity on offense? The first play of the game was beautiful. Great start to the game. You get... you know, thinking that they're going to Mason Taylor in the flat, but we had the running back going the opposite way on the wheel, wide open there. He had one guy to beat, just couldn't do it. Then you get Mason Taylor across. Then you get basically 6 downs to get a touchdown. And you can't punch it in? I mean, that hurt. Like, anytime that stuff kind of happens, it's always going to come around and kill you. And it did. I mean, if this team, let's just do the math here, Mason. We scored 17 in the first half. Let's add 2 touchdowns to that. At halftime. How are we feeling now? Right?
Yeah.
We're looking at 31 to 14. That second half is going to act way different. Like, I don't know how the team comes out in the second half, but like, you're at the, hey, it's time to do the kill shot here once we get out of the second half in this game. But you didn't make those scores. And Florida State got their opportunity and they took it. And they, like you said, they bullied this team around. This team looked soft. And I couldn't tell you if I have ever seen an LSU football team look soft like that. Obviously, like, I'm young. I haven't, like, I'm not in my 50s and haven't watched LSU football for tons of years. But I've watched for most of the past 2 decades. I at least remember the past 2 decades, at least from 2005 on. I remember a good bit. And I don't think I have ever seen a team, an LSU team, get bullied like that. Other than maybe playing Alabama, just because they play the brand better than we did in the teens. But I've never seen them get bullied like that ever. They looked soft.
Even with that, like, it's not like you guys were coming out projected to necessarily beat Alabama or be the favorite in the game. Like, this was supposed to be LSU's coming out party for this year, and they just completely rolled over. And even, like, the impressive thing to me about Florida State is in the second half, when LSU is rolling over, Florida State's not calling off the dogs. Like, they're like, no, we're still going to run it down your throat. You're rolling over. That's fine. We're going to run it over you. We're going to run over you even more. And, yeah, I just.
Mason, I'm going to keep going because I'm getting going here. Okay, I'm getting going. This wide receiver room, the wide receiver room in general at LSU has always been tons of hype. We have all these athletes in this state. They always come here. They're great athletes. They're explosive. They're game breakers. Where the heck were the wide receivers Sunday night? Malik Nabers, you're supposed to be one of the best wide receivers in the country. Where the heck are you? Why are you falling down on your route causing an interception? Why is it seem you're not getting any separation? Like, obviously, like, we don't get to see the all-22 view, so I don't know if this is on Jaden where he doesn't see the passes downfield like it was an issue last year. I don't know. I don't have access to that. What I do have access to is seeing Malik falling down on an interception, Brian Thomas dropping a bomb at the end of the 3rd quarter that would have led to points, Kyron Lacy dropping a critical 3rd down catch that if he catches that ball, could have scored a touchdown there, and we're still right there in the game after they scored and took the lead, and we take the lead right back. You get those plays, or Malik doesn't fall down, like, it's a game. But you don't make the plays. This wide receiver room has been hyped as one of the best in the conference, and you drop balls in critical moments. Yeah, Florida State dropped some passes, but when it mattered most, they made the plays. Keon Coleman, he's a 1st-round draft pick. Johnny Wilson, he's a 1st-round draft pick. They made their catches and their plays when they needed to. They made the touchdowns. Three of them. Malik Nabers, where the heck you at? Brian Thomas, when are you ever going to step up? Kyron Lacy, you were hyped all spring and summer. This receiver room has been praised and has been given this, hey, you're one of the best, without earning anything. They haven't earned anything as being called, even being considered a wide receiver, you, because you haven't done anything to take advantage of it. Last year, you were supposed to be great too. Kayshon didn't do much. He barely made the team in New England now. Malik had a 1,000-yard season. Where's everybody else? I mean, these are transfer players, like good players, but transfer players of Florida State in the secondary. That's one of their weakest parts of their team is their secondary. And you couldn't get separation, and you couldn't make game-breaking plays. You look at Florida State, they had tons of yards after catch, tons of yards after contact. With LSU, it was, hey, we're going to dink it there, maybe get a couple yards. We're going to dink it here with a comeback. We're going to dink it here. Like, that's all it was all game. Where's the explosive plays that we were told was coming this offseason? It wasn't there. The offensive line was praised as being one of the biggest improvements and could be one of the best in the league. Looked like garbage. We could not run the ball. They looked awful. The best one, Will Campbell. Verse was able to make one play because Will Campbell locked him up. Okay, the rest of your line, garbage. You couldn't run on the right side of the line. They blew you up every single time. And that doesn't help Jaden. Like, I understand, like, I don't know if I fully understand. I get the criticism of people of Jaden Daniels not knowing. But, like, part of that is, hey, some of these people that are making complaints about Jaden Daniels already made their mind up last year after the Tennessee game. Like, let's just be straight up honest right now. And that's how it is with a lot of these kind of quarterback competition type stuff, is you already have your mind made up about a guy, and as soon as he doesn't perform the way you want him to perform, or the team loses, whether it's his fault or not, he's the problem, and you need to put in the other guy. What is Garrett Nussmeier going to do without a running game like Jaden had this past week? I don't know if he's going to be able to do any better. I don't know if Jaden missed passes downfield. I mean, the drop to Brian Thomas obviously wasn't super accurate, but catch the freaking ball. Catch the ball. It's your job. It hits you in the hands. Catch the ball, and we're still in the game. So, like, I don't, like, we can have the conversation about Jaden Daniels once we actually see, like, he made bad reads on zone reads on Sunday, obviously. There are times where Jaden tries to play Superman and tries to do it himself. I think that's almost obvious to anybody. But he's also won us some games. So let's, I'm not ready to sell Jaden and be like, hey, just put in the other guy. Because I still believe in Jaden, and he was not helped out by his wide receivers. Critical plays, man. And that's just on the offensive side of the ball. The defensive side of the ball, I get you're missing Mason Smith, but where the heck is Harold Perkins? Even when he rushed, he was a non-factor. When he spied, last year as a spy, freaking Bryce Young couldn't even get away from him. And he's like Mr. Houdini. He's what won the Texas game last year because of that crap. And Harold Perkins was a man and stopped him as a spy and as a rusher. He single-handedly won the Arkansas game for us. And he's completely ineffective against Florida State because he's playing middle linebacker. He's playing a new position. But, like, they knew when he was rushing. It was obvious when he was, because he's in the middle and then, oh, okay, he's outside. He's rushing. We're gonna roll away from him. Like, what are we doing defensively in a schematic standpoint? Our cornerbacks, trash. That was the biggest worry of this team was corner. And one of the reasons why I picked LSU is because I thought we would be able to score, and I didn't think that they're going to get their yards, they're going to get their points. But at the end of the day, I believed in our coaching staff was better. and I believed our offense would be able to get it done. Our coaching staff crapped the bed in the second half. The thing that they were so great at last year was second half adjustments. There basically were none. This team thought they've already made it, and as Brian Kelly said in the press conference, thought they were the two-time national champion defenders of Georgia. That's who they thought they were. You listen to Jaden Daniels, he's like, we thought this game would be easy. How? What do you mean you thought this game would be? Like, I was confident. I'm a fan. Of course I'm confident my team is going to win. But I knew Florida State's a good team. That's the reason I picked them to win the ACC and is one of my favorites to make the playoff. Because they're a great team. That's probably going to be, in my opinion, that's probably the best team in the country right now and the best team this LSU team's going to play. I don't care if it's Bama or not. It's going to be one of those two. Maybe Texas, maybe Georgia, maybe. Like, they're, like, I have them ranked number one in our poll for me. You do too. They are that offensive line, that defensive line, that wide receiver group, six-year senior quarterback, great running backs. That's a great team. But you're also a great team. You showed it in the first half that you could control the game. You controlled that offense. You owned the ball and were driving it at will. And then you came out in the second half and decided, we've already won. And then they scored and you didn't know what to do with yourself. You choked in the moment. And then as soon as they were up two scores and we went three and out, they quit. I never thought I'd see that. That's probably the thing that makes me the most upset about all this is that that team quit. You were down 31-17. I get the game's probably already over, but have some freaking pride and drive down the field and get some points or something. You go three and out with missed assignments on first and second down, and you're just going to roll over like that? Unreal. Unreal for a team that was pumped up by the local media as being one of the best teams in the country this year. They can still be that. Hope isn't lost for this team. They can still get it together. But that was embarrassing to watch. I think I'm done.
Okay. I wasn't ready for you to be done. I was enjoying the show. but look, like you said, man, like it, them just rolling over like that was something that I never expected. You want for your team to be able to continue to push even when you feel like the game's out of hand. But for some reason, man, like they just gave up. But the season's not lost, like you were saying. Thankfully for LSU, this wasn't a conference loss, so it doesn't hurt you in the SEC standings. So you still have the ability to make a push for the playoffs and do what you need to do for the rest of the season. But now at this point, you have zero room for error. The thing I would be concerned about, though, is like where do you go from there? Like you take a loss like that in the very first game of the season. Like I don't know how you recover from that. And then like this week you're playing a nobody. So how do you, are you even going to know if any of the mistakes that you were making against a Florida State, against a better team are going to be fixed? Or are you just going to come out of next week being like, oh, hey, we won by 50. We're good again. Like that's the thing that would concern me. You have Mississippi State after that at Starkville. That's going to be a tough game. So if they're still in the same mindset of, it's easy for us. Like, we're just great. Like, I don't know how you come out of that one either. But it's going to be a long road for LSU to kind of recover from this. I still think they can, man. Like, they do still have talent. But you got to use your talent in the right ways. Like, Harold Perkins playing in the middle, as great as he is, probably not the go-to. Because you can't use him to all of his best abilities. But, yeah, man. Why are you putting a 5'11 corner on a 6'7 wide receiver? I mean, come on.
Because we don't have anybody. Like, that's the problem. Is we don't have any corners. I mean, when you look at the schedule, LSU is going to be favored until Alabama. And, like, we play Grambling this week, big whoop. And to answer your question, like if this team, after getting embarrassed on national TV on Sunday night, thinks that they've arrived after they just beat Grambling, then there are bigger issues going on, like coaching. Yes. And I don't think that's like Brian Kelly is a great coach. He knows what he's doing. Like he was brutally honest in the post game. We are not who I thought we were. And like that can sound troubling to some people. I totally get it. Like you can totally be fooled of how good you think your team is, or I mean, he kind of clarified it in his Tuesday press conference of like, they just rolled over. They didn't have that competitive edge. He kind of felt it going into that second half that they thought that they have already arrived. Like, I mean, what I talked about, like they thought they had it, and the dude got worked. Like since he's been here, like you've always kind of probably seen like the Kelly blow up kind of press conferences or the stuff on the sideline. You hadn't really seen it since he's been here in Baton Rouge. He's been real chill, relaxed, kind of joking and all this kind of stuff. Dude, like, went off at the end of the press conference. I mean, not like Saban go off because Saban yells at people and thinks he's God and everything and everybody cowers around him.
That's because he is. What are you talking about?
But, like, he, like, you could tell. I mean, you should feel sorry for those kids. You should feel sorry for those kids and what practice is going to be like the next few weeks. Because this Grambling game is just a glorified scrimmage. Oh, that's all it is, because you're not going to really know anything about this team until they go to Starkville. And they, if they can't learn from this and get to a good place, then they just never were going to. And I have faith in this coaching staff that they're going to get it together. They've always been really good coming off of losses after the Florida State game last year and after the Tennessee game last year. They've always been solid. And so I'm going off that. I mean, the team's got talent. We just, like you said, we got to find ways to get our playmakers the ball, get our playmakers on defense areas. I mean, like some of these corners may like, you know, why do you put a 5'11 corner on a 6'4, 6'7 guy? But like some of these guys, like they're in position. It's just Florida State made the play.
Yeah.
Like I don't like, you know, I just rant and rave for like 15, 20 minutes or whatever it was on LSU losing. But like, let's just like take a step back for a second. That Florida State team,
incredible,
is a legit national title contender.
Yes,
like sure. They're that good. Keon Coleman could, like, I don't care what Marvin Harrison does, he could be the best wide receiver in the class. He could be, and nobody knew about him because he played at Michigan State last year, and because of how bad Michigan State is. He's a legit guy. Johnny Wilson, legit guy. Keon's better than him, but like those are two monsters. Jordan Travis, I don't know what it is. Him being able to extend, like he has that ability kind of like a Bryce Young. He's not Bryce Young level, but he has the ability of Bryce Young to be able to extend plays enough to find the guy. Like he doesn't really scramble. He just finds time to throw to whatever the guy opens up because the defense isn't disciplined enough to stay on their guys. That running game's good. That offensive line is one of the best in the country. That defensive line with Jared Verse, unreal. Secondary is good enough. Like, that team could win a national championship.
Yeah, they can beat you in multiple ways. And you kind of, honestly, you saw it all laid out in front of you for against LSU. Like, you saw the defense played really well. The wide receivers were awesome. The running back is solid. Like, they just have so much talent on the field, and they were able to kind of put it all on display in the first game. And dude, they took everybody by storm. But I mean, going off of that too, like it feels like everybody thinks the world is burning for LSU. But I mean, they have every opportunity to turn it around. It'll just be if they do it.
Yeah, I mean, they'll have like everybody in the LSU message boards and radio. Well, not everybody in radio, but everybody's flipping out and the sky's falling. And as embarrassing as it was, and as how much ranting and raving I just did, this team is still a really good team and can still compete for a national championship. It's just they got things to work out, to work on. And obviously nothing this week means anything because it's Grambling. So we're going to have to wait a couple weeks till they go to Starkville to see what this team is really made of. And if this team can come out at Starkville and show and dominate that game, then I'll be right back where I was preseason. Okay, this team is what I thought they could be. They're still getting better, but they are showing that they are one of the best teams in the country. So, that's what it's going to come down to. So, come back to me in a couple weeks after the after the Mississippi State game. We'll see where we're at. But, again, it was just – again, it's another deflating start of a season, and that's four in a row. And it's not going to get any easier for LSU. Next year they play USC in Las Vegas. The year after that, they play Clemson at Clemson.
Can we get to 0-5 in opening games?
So, hey, let's just move the McNeese State game to week zero, man. Let's just rip off the Band-Aid and move
break it, okay? The curse.
Let's break the curse. Okay. Well, that's enough recap, I think. Let's go ahead and kind of move a little bit quicker, pick up the pace a little bit. Let's go to our Down to the Wire poll week two. Already kind of told you on how I ranked Florida State at one. Let's just go ahead and give our combined poll, what it came out to. Georgia, once again, still number one with two first place votes. Michigan at two. Florida State for us is at three. They got two first place votes, both by you and I. Both ranked them number one after this past week, but they're at three. Number four, Alabama. Penn State at five. USC at number six. Washington at seven. Texas coming in at number eight. So we got a top 10 matchup there in Tuscaloosa. At number nine, we have Tennessee. And then we actually have Ohio State rounding out the top 10. So we're pretty lower. We're much lower on Ohio State, you and I, in our poll than what the AP and coaches have. Just as a reminder to everybody, right now, the poll is Mason and I, along with combining with the coaches in the AP. You want your rankings to be included on this? We'd love to have it. Give it to us on social media. But so Ohio State running out the top 10. The rest of the way, we go Oregon at 11, Utah at 12, Notre Dame at 13, and LSU at 14, which actually matches what the coaches and the AP has for the drop for LSU. Kansas State at 15, North Carolina at 16, Oregon State at 17, followed by Oklahoma and Ole Miss, then Wisconsin down at 20, Tulane at 21. Then we got Duke, the Blue Devils, after beating Clemson, they're up to 22. Texas A&M is at 23. And then finally we get to Clemson all the way down to 24. Big free fall there for the Clemson Tigers. And then to round out the top 25, we have Mason's Colorado Buffaloes. Some other teams that received votes were Iowa, UCLA, Kentucky, and Louisville were teams that got votes but did not make the cut. So, with that being the poll, Mason, what are your thoughts on the poll this week?
I don't understand how Colorado isn't the number one team in the nation right now, but we'll save that conversation for another day.
Mason, let's listen. We're gonna ahead of ourselves, man. If they lose this week, boy, it's gonna be a rough look.
But yeah, I mean, I actually really agree with most of our poll. I feel like North Carolina could have been a little bit higher. I thought they put on a good performance against South Carolina, which tough week for you, dude.
LSU. It was a tough week. It was rough.
But yeah, I mean, Ole Miss at 19, they put up a crazy amount of points. Or not really, but Oklahoma did. They put up, 70-something against the school of blind that they were playing?
Yep. Poor Butch Jones.
Yeah.
Did you see that? Yeah, that's poor guy. That's
tough. But, yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to see how this actually looks next week, because I do think there could be some potential shakeup in a good bit of this. Washington's another team that I'd like to keep an eye on. I think thought they looked awesome last week against Boise. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty chalk. Like you said, I have Florida State at number one, too. I just thought after that performance, I don't know how you can't put them at number one.
The reason why they're not number one in the coaches in the AP is because they're still kind of going off of history in the past. Yeah. Florida State is going to have probably the most impressive win, unless Bama or Texas completely blows out one another. They're going to have the most impressive win than anybody in the country. And there's no reason why Georgia, who played a nobody, and Michigan, who played a nobody, should be ahead of them. There's no reason to. They should be ranked number one.
So that's what I was going to say. I feel like there's a group of like four teams right now between Georgia, Michigan, Alabama, and Penn State. All of those are just kind of like, you have to wait and see at this point. Like, you can make an argument that all four of those teams could be better than Florida State, but none of them are going to have that same type of win on their resume.
Nobody's played the competition, man.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, like, I just think it's gonna be interesting. Ohio State, they've looked rough week one. This is definitely their worst quarterback situation in a while. I'm not quite ready to hop off the Ohio State bandwagon though. Because they do still have a ton of talent around that kid. And if Ryan Day can kind of pick up his play somehow, some way, I do think they can make it interesting. But coming out of it, I did feel like Penn State was definitely better than Ohio State.
Yeah. Ohio State did drop a good bit. LSU, I had on my poll, I had them at 10 on mine, whereas you and the other two polls had them at 14. The reason why I had them at 10 still was because I'd still pick them over Utah. I'd still pick them over USC. I'd still pick them over Notre Dame. I'd still pick them over Kansas State. But I understand why they're as low as they are, because they did get blown out and didn't look good, especially in that second half. Again, dude, if we get first half LSU the whole game, I don't know if we win the game, but it like is actually a great game like everybody expected it to be.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, man, it was definitely rough. But I totally get the fall. One thing that is different between you and I is that you ranked Colorado along with one or two of the other polls. I did not. I have them right outside of my top 25 in my rankings.
Because you're a hater, Cam.
Not because I'm a hater, but hey, let's wait and see. Let's give it another week. If they win this week, they're for sure in. Like, it's just like, hey, win, and we'll keep rewarding you. But I wasn't comfortable putting them in top 25 with them having the matchup they have this week. Let's just wait and see.
Dion, when you call us out on our podcast, come for him, not me, okay? I'm on your side.
whatever, man. So that's the top 25 poll. We'll have that posted again on social media for you guys to see. And again, if there is any interaction or any involvement that we can get from you guys, the audience, it's the poll. We would love for you guys to get involved with that. We can have as many people as possible on this poll to make it ours. And so go ahead and you can email us or you know, I'll put a tweet out on a tweet on X or whatever the heck you want to call it on Twitter, social media. Nah, even
get that X out of here.
On Twitter, I'll put a tweet out on Twitter and then even a post on Facebook. So if you want your top 25s, you can either comment or apply to those or even send us an email at downtothewirecm@gmail.com for those rankings after Saturday. But let's go ahead and move on, Mason, to the next segment. We have two more segments left for you guys. And so fantasy, Mason, how did fantasy end up for us last week?
Yes.
Sanders saved you.
He did. No, 100%. And you poo-pooed that move last week. And he pulled through. 500-something passing yards. Oh, man, that was great. Look. Shador Sanders saved me from my mistake of trusting a depth chart. North Carolina, get your crap together, because the running back I picked from North Carolina didn't even sniff the field. So Shador, thank you for saving me. So I ended up beating you by 3 points this week. So it was very close. Thankfully, Cade Klubnik decided to have two turnovers.
Trash. Saved me.
So I'm starting off 1-0 against you, just like last year. Plan on doing that again. So going into it this week, I have Jalen Milroe as my quarterback. His ability on the ground to pick up numbers like that in fantasy. I didn't want to pass it up against Texas. So I have Jalen Milroe as my quarterback. Running back, I have Audric Estime from Notre Dame. He's put up two straight, really good weeks. So I think he has a chance to keep it going. My wide receiver is Evan Stewart from Texas A&M. They're playing Miami this week, so it should be a good game. They surprisingly enough actually look kind of decent on offense. I think they might possibly have something with Connor Wegman. I'm not ready
they
to dip
played
my feet off.
New
Wegman.
Mexico.
Look, I'm not ready.
One of the worst teams in the nation.
I'm not ready to dip my feet all the way
Even
in, but
you
I do.
Could probably score 49 points on New Mexico.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I will take that as a compliment. but yeah, so I'm going with Evan Stewart as my wide receiver. Tight end. For my dartboard throw of the week, I have no clue who to pick, so I went with Jack Indries, the tight end from California. So we'll see if that actually pulls through for me. I would count on it. But my flex position, I had to get a Colorado buff on my team, so I went with wide receiver Jimmy Horn Jr. I really thought about going with Travis Hunter, but at the same time, I'm kind of worried about picking him because I don't know if he's going to play like that every week on both sides. So yeah, I went with Jimmy Horn as my flex.
All right, well, freaking Cade Klubnik killed my hopes and dreams. If it wasn't for the interception and fumble at the end of the game,
you win.
I would have won. I would have won, but no, he has to be awful. Thank you so much, Dabo, for that. So I got to come back. I got to win this week. And so my quarterback, listen, I ain't taking chances here. I'm going with the guy that's going to get a ton of points against Tulane. It's going to be Jackson Dart of Ole Miss. He threw for like a billion yards last week. He's going to throw for a billion more. Okay. So Jackson Dart at Ole Miss is the quarterback. Running back, I'm going with Bucky Irving from your boys over in Eugene, Oregon. Oregon Ducks leading running back. At wide receiver, I'm going to kind of stick to Pac-12 here. I'm going with Taj Washington from USC. So Caleb Williams, just throw him the ball, please. I don't even care if he scores. Just give him like 20 catches in the game. It'll be good, okay? Tight end, you know what? I had to pick a player that's going to be in this Bama-Texas game. I'm going with the tight end of Jatavion Sanders at Texas, who's a stud. And might wreck your team. And then at flex, you know what? Because I'm just such a hater, I had to pick the running back against Colorado because of that run defense. I'm going with Gabe Irvin, the running back at Nebraska. And, you know, back-to-back weeks of running backs against Colorado, I think I feel pretty good about it because Trey Sanders really helped me last week. So that's going to be my guy.
Trey Sanders, I still love you. Thank you for losing that game.
So that's fantasy this week. We'll see if I can get my revenge and get on the board with a win. And hopefully that's the case because having Mason be undefeated and constantly winning in fantasy is pretty unbearable. So especially since he did also win the picks last week too, segue into that. Mason went 6-4 in our picks last week, whereas I went 4-6. You did pretty solid in your picks last week, Mason. I did have a sneaky cover with Penn State that saved me. So,
get that out of here. Last Penn State, what are you doing? Take a knee, Penn State.
So, super thankful for that. So, let's go ahead and get into our picks, Mason. Friday night, a sneaky good game. I don't know if many people know about it, but Illinois, the Fighting Illini, and Brett Bielema, fat boy over there in Illinois. Going on the road to Kansas. Who would have thought, hey, we're not talking basketball, Mason. We're talking football in Illinois at Kansas on Friday night. Kansas is a 3-point favorite, which is even crazier. Okay. Kansas being a favorite in a football game. What do you think on Illinois at Kansas on Friday night?
Yeah, Kansas was one of our darlings last year. So I'm going to rock with them again. I still think that Jalen Daniels is a good quarterback. He is great on the ground, so I think they're going to be able to pull it out against Illinois.
You know, they were one of our darlings last year, but I don't think it's going to be this year, Mason. I think Illinois is a really solid team, and I'm picking Illinois to not just cover, but I think they go into Kansas and win. So let's now move to Saturday, and it's a really good slate of games. I even missed one that I thought we needed to pick, but it's not on here. So let's just get to the ones we are doing. Vanderbilt, the Commodores, 2-0, going on the road to Wake Forest. Wake Forest is a 10.5-point favorite, basically. do you think what do you think on that?
Cam, I never thought that these words would come out of my mouth, but I'm going with Vandy. I have
really
no No, I have no analysis to give you for this game. Absolutely zero. I'm just going with my gut, and I'm taking Vandy.
Well, you know, the ACC has been kicking the SEC's butt so far. They're 3-0 this year. I think they're going to make it 4-0. Are you picking Vandy outright, or cover the 10.5?
I just think they're going to cover.
Okay, well, I don't. I like Wake Forest because Vandy is horrible. They almost lost to freaking Hawaii, who then got beat pretty bad by Stanford last week. RIP Rainbow Warriors. All right, so yeah, I'm going Wake Forest on that one. Next is maybe a good game, Notre Dame at NC State. NC State does not have any of the hype that they had last year as they missed a lot of players. Notre Dame is a 7.5-point favorite in this one on the road. What do you think?
So Notre Dame has put up two straight good performances. I know the first two games really haven't been against anybody impressive at all, but they have been very good in the run game. So I think they're going to be able to continue that this week. And so I'm going with Notre Dame.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Notre Dame too. I don't think NC State has the horses. And I think Notre Dame with Sam Hartman has made a really big difference in their offense because you can't just sit on the run with them anymore like you could last year. And so I really like Notre Dame. I think they do cover the 7.5 as well. So Notre Dame. The next one, dude, this was a game that we were kind of hyped on in the off season that really lost its luster because Baylor crapped the bed and lost to freaking Texas State. And so Utah is going on the road to Baylor. Have you heard any more news about Cam Rising in this one? Is he playing? I don't think he is. I don't know if he's ready. And so this really makes it interesting. Baylor's also out there starting quarterback though, too. He's out a couple of weeks with an MCL sprain. So both teams without their starting quarterbacks, but they're also on complete opposite sides coming off of week one games where Utah destroyed and dismantled Florida. They also have the extra time to prepare, and Baylor is licking its wounds after losing to a not very good Texas State team. Utah's a 7.5-point favorite on this one, Mason. What do you think about this on the road for Utah?
Yeah, so I still haven't heard anything about Cam Rising. I have no clue if he's playing, but I have inserted a new rule into my rule book of life, and that is to never doubt Utah. So I'm just going with Utah. I just got to stop doubting them. So I'm going to start this week and ride with them.
I'm going to go against that. I think because Baylor's at home, I think they'll cover. I don't know if they'll win, but I think they're at least going to cover the 7.5 with Dave Aranda getting these boys ready to play defense. They were probably looking a week ahead and just weren't ready for this one for whatever reason. I mean, that happens all the time. We are talking about college kids, but I think Dave Aranda is going to get the boys ready to play. And I think they put up a really good fight against Utah. I think they keep it within the 7.5. I don't know if I would pick them to win though, but I'm going to go Baylor on the point spread there. So next is Mason's new favorite team, Nebraska, on the road at Colorado. I think this has probably been the biggest point spread change in a while. Colorado is a 3.5-point favorite at home against Nebraska. Again, different style of ball that Nebraska plays than what TCU does. Does that matter, Mason? What do we think?
You know where I'm going with this, Cam. You don't even have to ask. I can't go against my Buffs now after I've been hyping them up. And look, Big Noon kickoff again. Let's just keep them on the Big Noon kickoff every week, and we're good.
Dude, those guys at Fox are just like, thank God. Thank God. They would have been dead in the water with Nebraska losing and if TCU destroyed Colorado like a lot of people thought. They would have been like, crap. But they are just like looking like the smartest people in the room. I'm going Colorado as well. Yeah. I think they beat Nebraska. I think they have too much skill on the outside, and I think they get it done with Travis Hunter and the crew. So next is just one of these like weird, like, why are you traveling there? Ole Miss going to Tulane. Like, why? Why is this a thing? You're Ole Miss. There's no reason for you to go to Tulane. Why is this even on the schedule? But they're going to Tulane, and Ole Miss is 7.5-point favorites. Tulane is the highest-ranked Power 5 or a Group of 5 team. They beat USC in the Cotton Bowl last year. What do you think about Ole Miss and Tulane?
Yeah, so I think Ole Miss has a chance to.
You even said in the offseason, hey, yeah, look how Tulane could beat Ole Miss. So
I do. I really do. And so with that being said, I am going with Tulane, but I think it's going to go one of two ways. I think Tulane's either going to win the game closely or Ole Miss is just going to completely blow them out the water. But I'm riding with Tulane this week. I think that they really do have a really good shot of beating Ole Miss, especially because it's at home.
I'm going Ole Miss. I think they destroy them. I mean, I don't think this is going to be close. I don't. Ole Miss all the way. Go Black Bears. next is the Texas A&M Aggies going on the road to Miami. This is a pretty good game last year in Kyle Field. Both teams and programs in a very similar spot because they both had horrible years last year, hoping to rebound this year. Both had big moves in the offseason that coaching changes on offensive coordinator. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes together. Texas A&M is a 4.5-point favorite on the road. What do you think, Mason?
Yeah, I'm just not ready to commit to Miami. I still think that they have a lot of building to do, and Texas A&M still does have some talent. I know I've been hating on Jimbo a lot, but I am going to go with Texas A&M.
I can't do it, Mason. I can't pull the trigger on Texas 5-7, okay? I can't do it, and so I'm going Miami covering and winning. I think they get the W here. Go Mario Cristobal, okay? He was your boy. Apparently he's not anymore, but I'm going Mario Cristobal and Miami. Going with the U. I think they beat Texas 5-7. And first step to Jimbo losing his job. next, we got the fight in Iowa. Iowa at Iowa State. Your favorite Iowa Hawkeyes. Not Cyclones, Hawkeyes. What we got, Mason? Iowa's a 4-point favorite.
When you have to put a scoring.
Last year.
When you have to put a scoring clause in your offensive coordinator's contract that they have to score 24 points a game, that is so ridiculous. I will never pick Iowa. I don't care who they're playing. So give me Iowa State, and I will sink with this ship. I do not care. I will never support Iowa and what they're doing right now with this offensive coordinator. Get it out of here.
I'll take Iowa in the free points. I'll take it.
I do not care if this is a free win for you. I do not care. I will never do it.
Listen, at what point is it going to, like, at what, if how long does it take for Iowa to go undefeated for you to include them in your top 25?
When they fire their offensive coordinator, when he's gone.
So they could be going like 10-0 and correct. You not have them in.
Yes. 100%.
So ridiculous. Okay, let's go out a game out west. Auburn going to Cal. Auburn's a 6.5-point favorite. This is weird. I don't know how I feel about the line because you're also going cross country, but also it's Cal. But also Auburn was really bad last year. So I don't know what to pick. What do you think, Mason?
So I was pretty convinced I was going to go with Auburn. The cross country travel is really scaring me. And also the line has like weirdly been dropping. I want to say it started off around like 8. And like you just said, it's down to 6. I think probably by kickoff, it might be down to 5. So I think I'm going to go with Cal, unfortunately. But I don't feel great about it.
I'm not going to feel great about either one, honestly. It's just so Cal is so bad, or they have been bad. But also, Pac-12 has been undefeated. Yeah.
They look pretty decent last week.
Do they keep it? I think I'm going to go with you. I think I'm going to go Cal. I think they'll cover. I don't know if they'll win, but I think they'll cover the 6.5. I like the spot that we have it at 6.5 instead of it being at 6 or 5. I think that's a good number if you can get it. So I'm going to go Cal as well. And now the game of the week, Mason. Texas going to Bama and Tuscaloosa. Bama is a 7-point favorite in this one. The only reason why they won last year in Austin was because Bryce Young was Mr. Houdini. Don't have Bryce Young, but you have Jalen Milroe. He looked pretty solid last week. You know, have flashes of Jalen Hurts. I mean, I don't know how you feel about that, but 7-point favorite against Texas. I already think I know who you're picking. But get a little bit of a breakdown. What's the key to the game? What do you want to see? How does Bama win it?
I think the big thing for Bama this week is making Texas one-dimensional. Quinn Ewers is a good quarterback. They have some good wide receivers. I think if you completely take out the run game, I think you're going to put yourself in a very good chance to win the game. The one thing I will say that does worry me a little bit is that currently Malachi Moore and Jaden Key are both day-to-day right now. They both got hurt last week. So I don't know if either one of them are going to play this week. If you lose both of them, that's going to be a tough shot to your secondary, especially against a good offense like Texas. I liked what I saw out of the offense last week. If they can continue to build off that, I'm still very confident that we're going to win this game. But like I said, if you can get Texas to just be one-dimensional, if you can completely take out that run game, you're going to put yourself in a great chance to win. It's going to be a crazy environment in Bryant Denny. So I'm excited for the game, and I do think Bama's going to win by 100. I can't lie.
Ends it with the homer by 100. Okay, you're just better, right?
Oh, dude, better. Yes. Nick Saban, are you kidding me?
Yeah, no. I'm going with Texas because I had Texas in my college football playoff and in my national championship game. And here's why. I think Texas' run defense is one of the best in the nation, and I think they shut down Alabama's run game. And you're going to have to force Jalen Milroe to pass the ball. And I don't think he's going to be able to do it consistently. He has some really good, pretty deep balls, but when you can't run the ball, it's not going to be there. The key to the game for Texas is going to be their offensive line. Their offensive line didn't look great against Rice. That's kind of the concern of the team, because everything else is there for them. Offensive line, can you hold up against that Bama pass rush? Can you run the ball? And then on the other side, can you stop the run? And their defensive front is great. Bama, I'm still not sure on how their wide receivers are. I'm still shaky on Jalen Milroe being the quarterback and being able to pass the intermediate routes and keep, you know, the game alive. You don't find out much when you play the games that these two teams played last week. You just don't. I mean, maybe you learn, okay, maybe Texas' offensive line isn't that great, but how much of that is, hey, they're just looking forward to Bama and weren't really fully into, like, you just really never know in this kind of stuff because you kind of said the same things about Texas last year leading up to this game, and their offensive line played really great against Will Anderson and Dallas Turner. So I like Texas. I think they go into Bryant Denny, and I think they snap the 21-game home streak for Alabama. I don't care if Alabama puts your fans up in the nosebleeds or not. Yeah. It doesn't matter, and it's petty crap anyway.
Oh, that was karma. What are you talking about? Completely
who
karma.
Cares? Who cares?
That's what they did last year. Did you
that's
care
what
last
they
year?
They do to everybody. I don't care.
Yeah, well,
who cares?
That's what they did. Welcome to the
SEC.
They did that
to LSU in 2019, and we still won. I just don't care. So, but I'm going Texas. Texas by 100, Mason. No, I'm just gonna. I think they win by three. I think they win by three.
Man, no, yeah, dude. I'm looking forward to that game a lot. I think it's gonna be exciting. It's gonna be a good game, and I'm looking forward to it because I think Bryant Denny's gonna be electric, and normally. The crowd kind of gets a bad rap because, look, everybody, most Alabama fans, they don't worry too much. But when a big game comes up like this, like 2019 LSU, that crowd was insane. So when you have a team coming in that you think could give you a run, like Texas is going to be able to, then the crowd starts popping off. So it's going to be a cool atmosphere.
It's going to be a great atmosphere. I think it's going to be a great game. Again, it's going to, can Bama run the ball consistently, which is what they want their MO to be this year. If they can, I think they'll probably win. And if they can't, then I think Texas is going to win. I think the thing for Alabama is if they can prevent the big plays by the Texas offense to Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell in the passing game early, then you're right where you want to be. But if they get out to fast start, then you better watch out because if they're up 14-0 because of bang bang plays, you're not a team this year that's built to come from behind like you have been in the past. So yeah. You gotta have a good start if you're Bama, and you gotta be able to control the clock. If you can't control the clock, if you can't consistently run the ball, which has been issues in the past couple of years, then it could be a long night. But I mean, it's gonna be a great game. I think Texas will win by three, but I honestly would not be surprised if Bama won. So
Yeah, by 100. You're right.
Okay. Okay. Whatever, Mason. All right, guys, that's it for us this week. We have week 2 of college football coming back at us, and we will be here next week to react and to pick games and to keep it going. So appreciate you guys for listening, and